Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Cohen's Corner. We have a lot of really exciting things to get into. You might be surprised by our very happy, optimistic tone throughout most of this episode. We're going to start with the very exciting win that the Mets had against the Phillies this week, that where they came back from six runs down in the ninth inning, scoring seven times to beat them 8-7. And it was the biggest comeback since the year I was born. So that was very exciting. Mets had not come back from six runs down in 25 years since 1997. We're also going to get into the combined no-hitter from last week, which we hadn't talked about yet in the podcast, that is still looming very large in our collective imaginations and minds since it was such a rare and exciting event. So we're going to talk about that. And there's a few other things that have happened this week. It's been a very eventful week in Mets land. There was a doubleheader against the Braves that the Mets swept, which Jake and I both attended. I was at both games. Jake was at game two. So we're going to talk about that. And then maybe we'll get talk about Robinson Cano getting DFA'd. We'll see where that lands in the discussion. But for now, let's talk about the really, really excited comeback from yesterday. Relatively unprecedented, not only in Mets history, but also in MLB history. I believe I saw a stat that apparently over the last three seasons, MLB teams were 0-684 when being down by six runs in the ninth inning. And the Mets in their last like 300, the Mets were like 0 for their last 330 when down by six runs in the ninth. So clearly not something that happens every day. I unfortunately didn't get to watch it because I was out at the time. So I'll let Jake kind of share his experience of watching this game live because he was only one between the two of us who actually saw it, even though I did watch the highlights later, of course.
It was kind of a roller coaster. Well, I watched the beginning of the game, and I like the 6:45 start. I do like that. I wish that the Mets would do that kind of on their own. But, yeah, so I was watching the beginning, and, you know, Lindor had that big error in the first inning that kind of broke everything open. And, yeah, I was watching the first couple innings, but then the Rangers were playing the Penguins in the playoffs, so I kind of turned my attention to that. I was watching that, so
makes
I was flipping
makes
back.
Sense.
Yeah, I was flipping back and forth a little bit. But then when the Rangers game ended, because I knew the Mets were getting killed, so I kind of just stopped paying attention. So when the Rangers game ended, I flipped on the Mets game. Me and one of my roommates were watching it. And
after the comeback had already started.
After it started, but like at a good time. Like they were still losing 7-4 when I turned it on. So Dom Smith was up and he struck out. And then JD came up, hit that double. And yeah, it was the rest is kind of history. But yeah, it was nuts. I just kept saying, like, is this happening right now? Like, this is crazy. And it was just I couldn't believe it. And I thought for sure, like, once they came back, I was like, well, this is just too good to be true. Like, is Edwin going to blow this in the ninth? How's it going to go? But Diaz has looked how he's looked all year. I mean, he no problems at all in the ninth inning. 1-2-3. He didn't make it stressful. I was expecting a little bit of stress at least. And oh, yeah, so easy. I mean, he's been dominating, especially been dominating the Phillies this year. I mean, we'll talk about the no-hitter, but last week when he finished off the no-hitter, it's the best he's looked, I think, in a Mets uniform. Yeah, it was an incredible comeback. So unexpected. This team is just different, and this team has it. It's hard to kind of say what it is, but this team has it, and they had it in 2015. I mean, we had that feel. Like, there were so many great comeback wins, I feel like, in 2015, especially down the stretch, and this has a feel like that. I know a lot of people say it feels like 86, which obviously is a long time ago. Neither of us were alive.
I like that, but I hate using that comparison because the 86 team actually won the World Series, you know? Like,
well,
if
we
don't
win it
get
all,
ahead
of myself. We could look back on times like this and be like, all right, well, maybe it really did have something to do with it, but
yeah, you know?
Yeah,
I just
it
don't
is early.
Get,
it's still
I,
the beginning
I'm so
of May.
Excited, but I don't want to get over.
No, I agree with you, but living in the moment, that was a phenomenal comeback win. Unbelievable. And again, to do it against the Phillies, to dominate the Phillies the way we have so far early this season, it's been a great feeling. Because I know obviously we have a couple of rivals, but there's no team in the world I'd rather beat up on than the Philadelphia Phillies. So to be able to do it against them just puts the icing on the cake.
So my experience, so you saw it partway through the ninth inning. I was actually out. I saw the beginning of the game while I was finishing up work and then was out with friends. So I didn't check my phone. I was like, no, because normally sometimes I'll like, if I'm like going to the bathroom, I'll check my phone just to see like what's going on. And I didn't even check my phone this time today because I was like, you know what? They were down 7-0. Whatever. If something good happens, I'll hear about it later. Then all of a sudden at like, it was like a 10:05 PM. I got like 10 different texts at once from like, I was like, what is going on? I felt my purse buzzing over and over. I was like, what is happening? And it was only from like a couple different people. Don't worry. I'm not that popular. But all of a sudden I saw like five texts from my dad and like five texts from my other friend who was watching the game. And then a couple texts from someone else who was a Phillies fan and who's one of my friends. And I was like, what happened? Like, I was not, I was so, because the last time I checked, it was like a bad game. And I just figured, you know, whatever, it was a dud. That's fine. So I missed the whole thing, but I did watch it later. And I just can't believe, like, it's also amazing in that ninth inning too, watching it back, Knebel had that one play against Canna where the ball like went off his leg and he didn't make the play. But other than that, and Marte beat out the infield single to start the inning. But like every other hit the Mets had was like a good hit. Like I was looking back, I was like, Pete hit like a bullet down the left field line. JD's double was laced down the left. I mean, they didn't have any cheap hits really, other than like the infield single and the Phillies didn't really make mistakes that led to that. The Mets just hit really well in that inning. I mean, McNeil's hit. I was just so impressed by the level of hitting in that ninth inning, really. It's not like there were like three errors that opened the door, you know? It was just very solid hitting all around. And I even liked also what Nimmo said in the post game, where he was talking about how their attitude kind of going into that inning was like, it's not so much, oh, we're going to win this game, like we have to win, but it's more like every person coming up to bat did their job and like had the right approach of just having a good at bat and making sure that they did the very best they could and really, you know, didn't just like take three pitches and like swing wildly at strike three or whatever. Every single person who came up, you know, I mean, Dom Smith struck out, but just the approach all around seemed extremely solid. And I was impressed by the level of hitting that we saw in the ninth. Like I said, it's not like the Phillies made a bunch of defensive errors that led to the seven runs. It was just all the Mets hitting. And that was the most impressive part to me, was after looking completely dormant the whole game, that happened. Like,
yeah, they didn't
came
do
alive.
Anything. The entire game, they didn't do any. I mean, besides with that Marte home run, they looked lifeless as they've looked all year. And especially coming off a loss where they got blown out by the Braves, it looked like it was just going to be another blowout loss. And you're going to have to sit on it for a couple days because might be a couple rainouts coming. We don't know with this Philly weather what it's going to be like. But they were lifeless the entire game. And, I mean, their approach in the ninth inning has looked a lot like their approach all year. They haven't hit a ton of home runs this season, but they've been scoring at a pretty good rate. And, yeah, they had the Lindor home run in the inning. But other than that, like you said, a lot of base hits and just everyone kind of doing their job, just playing a role and coming together as a team. And
it was 7-4 with two outs.
Two outs. And usually, like, in situations
JD
in the past,
Davis
like
up.
The Mets don't come through in situations like that. Like, usually, and I was seeing it all on Twitter last night, usually it's we're on the other end of this. Like, a couple years ago when Washington made that huge comeback in the ninth, I think they were down 5 or 6, and they came back against us to win. So we've been on the other end of it. We know how it is. So maybe that makes it even sweeter.
I think it does.
To kind of be on the winning side. It was one of the most improbable wins I've ever seen as a Mets fan. And I mean, it's the biggest comeback in 25 years. So I can't even wrap my head around it. Like, I was just looking again at highlights today of it, and I'm just like, I can't believe that happened. So I think there's going to be a lot of moments that are like this, maybe not to this magnitude, but I mean, look at the win they had in St. Louis already a couple weeks ago.
Like, yeah. That feels like, you know, nothing compared to this.
I know, right? But it's already the early May and we're piling up wins like these. Like, wins like this are very important for team morale and just to kind of, you know, show that we're not going to go down without a fight. And I was even saying that when it was 7-4, when I had just turned the game on, I was like, wow, like, at least they're showing some fight here. They're not just going down easy like Mets teams of the past. So, I mean, that was a good sign. And I didn't expect them to finish the comeback. But, wow, like, it was an incredible, incredible comeback. And just a great night to be a Mets fan for sure.
You're right. I mean, this is not going to happen that often. But as I remember us saying this last year too, like, every win counts, you know. The more improbable wins, like, every win that they're piling up now is crucial, like every single one. And so there's a couple games, there's some games every year that they should win that they're going to lose. But if they can get as many wins that they maybe should have lost that they end up winning, I'm not like counting down to the end of the season by any means, but just as many wins as you can get, the better. And so like this game is probably one, if they had lost, I would have been like, okay, you know, they're 18-10. That's still good. You know, we're moving on to the next day. But I'm like, to actually pull this out, I mean, what if this ends up being crucial? You never know. Like, what if they make the playoffs by one game? I mean,
yeah, that's why they say
you never know.
A win in the beginning of the season is just as valuable as a win in September.
Exactly.
I mean, each win counts. I mean, obviously, like, you're paying more attention because you know where everybody else is at in the standings. You know what's gone on all season when you're
they count the same the whole year.
But a win is a win, and you'll take them any way you can get them. And I remember last year when we were talking about the team, like around this time, maybe a little later into May, we were saying, yeah, the Mets had a good record and were in first place, but they just didn't really have that feel of like a really, really good team. Like they were winning close games. And I remember you saying like, yeah, they're winning close games, but it didn't have like that winning feel. And maybe it wasn't going to kind of carry on. Like, were they really a good team? But this year, I just think it has a completely different feel to it. The way they're winning, like they're winning in all different ways. Sometimes it's because of their pitching, like nights like last night where their pitching wasn't as good. Their offense steps up for that.
How about the bullpen? I mean, there's that's two games this week. Yeah. The bullpen has done like four shutout innings.
They were great. Jason Shreve looked great. Adonis Medina. So far, what we've seen out of Medina, obviously very small sample size, and he's been DFA'd by a couple teams. So obviously we're going to have to see what he can actually do long term. But he's been phenomenal. I mean, his first outing with the team, he struck out the side. And then
against the D-backs, right?
Yep, yeah. And he got sent down. And then to come up last night and throw multiple innings scoreless, I mean – that was huge. And even just for him to, even if they hadn't come back, just for him to kind of save the bullpen last night and not tax any other arms, you know. But yeah, and Jason Shreve, I mean, they've really found lightning in a bottle with him. Because in past years, I mean, with the Yankees, he had some good spurts. He's been a decent reliever for a little bit, but not to this level. I mean, this, he has been phenomenal. I mean, he's kind of stepped in, they haven't lost a step missing Aaron Loop. I mean, we'll see how long that continues, obviously. But, man, yeah, it's just the team. They're firing on all cylinders. When one area of the team is kind of weak one night, it seems like other areas kind of, they step up. So it's just, like I said, this team, they have the it. And it's not something we've been able to say about the Mets probably since the end of 2015.
Yeah, and it's funny you were mentioning that game against Washington. I think it makes it even sweeter because the Mets fans know, like, this can happen. We've seen it happen in our, you know, the last few years. I remember that game against the Nationals. I almost went to that game. I had to work late, so I didn't end up going. But I, like, could have gone and ended up not going, and but watched it from home. And that was a disaster, obviously. I think it was, like, DeGrom against Scherzer. We all know what happened. But, like, we've seen this happen. And, like, that's why, especially if you're ahead, don't – that's why keeping your foot on the gas in these games is so important. Say this a bit – like, this could have easily been the Mets. And we've seen it, like I just said. So – you know, that's why the whole thing is about, like, unwritten rules. If you're up by six runs, like, not trying anymore. Like, you know?
That's like, so dumb. Like, that should be such a thing of the
possible.
Past. Like,
anything is possible in a baseball game. That's what
every
makes
run,
from other
every
sports.
Run counts. There's no reason to, like, take your foot off the gas.
And I'm not saying
because...
the Phillies stopped trying. I'm sure
no,
they did.
But other situations, no. Yeah, it just proves that there's no reason for people to be getting pissed off about unwritten rules.
Especially
if you're punting
with a
six-run down six
run
runs,
game.
If you're stealing. Mm-hmm. Like, if it's, like, 15-1, okay, that's different.
I think it's if it's more than 10, I could see not
sure,
stealing if
10,
it's like
fine.
More than but 10 runs.
I'm
fine.
So over people but, getting pissed off if you're going to bunt, if you're going to do like play small ball when you're up a lot. Like, who cares? Every run matters. And we see that now with baseball. Like, there's comebacks all the time. Every run matters. So for people to get upset over stuff like that should be a thing of the past. The unwritten rules, like, it's just most of it's bullshit. And it's just, it's frustrating. But yeah, a game like this, you're right, it proves that kind of no lead is safe. So there should never be a time where you're kind of just like coasting the rest of the game, because you never know what that's baseball. You never know what's going to happen. So you kind of just need to prepare yourself for every possible outcome.
Right. And I didn't see the whole game, obviously, like I said. So Familia pitched the eighth. Was there a reason why did he throw a lot of pitches in the eighth inning? Like, I'm also wondering.
No, like, I mean, I didn't watch.
You didn't watch that.
But I'm just, I could be 100% wrong, but I'm just assuming since they were up so much, they didn't think they needed to burn Familia. I mean, and he's usually a one inning guy anyway.
Yeah,
so.
That's true.
I'm surprised. I was looking at today. I was kind of surprised they even went to Familia in a 6-run lead, because he's kind of one of their better relievers. But
right.
I mean, clearly they thought they needed some help. But the fact that – and it's not like just like they did this off the bottom of the Phillies' pen. I mean, a lot of the damage ended up coming off Knebel.
Yeah.
Like, that's another boost going into the rest of the year. Like, when you face him, that's going to give the team confidence, and that obviously can't hurt. So to be able to do it off Knebel, too, was huge.
Yeah, and that reminds me, too, of something Gary said – or it was Gary, some combination of Gary and Ron said in that game against the Cardinals when the Mets came back against Gallegos. You know, if you're going to – pile up a lot of wins, you're going to have to be the other team's closer. Like, they said that prophetically before
Ron
the Mets came back against the Cardinals in the ninth inning. And closers aren't unbeatable. They're often the team's best reliever, but you're right, kind of building up that confidence in terms of just having comebacks against supposedly team's best relievers is hopefully very inspiring for the Mets. And I also just loved all like dugout reactions too. Like SMY posted a few clips of like everyone getting super excited, like Chris Bassett getting like super into it from dugout on his day off. I didn't see any clips of Scherzer. I'm sure if they had shown him or if he was in the dugout, I'm sure he was like going wild.
I didn't see him in the ninth, but they showed him earlier in the game and he just looked so pissed off when they were losing. So I would have loved to, I'm sure they showed him on TV late in the game. I didn't catch it, but
I recorded the game so I could watch, because I kind of want to watch the full ninth now, knowing that they ended up winning, because I saw the highlights, but I kind of want to see like all the kind of.
You got to go on Twitter and watch the Phillies broadcast version of it. It's very
satisfying. I try not to have like too much schadenfreude, but I did watch that and it was very
because of all the times the Phillies have like come back against the Mets and I've had to hear that broadcast of them like losing their minds to hear them on that broadcast last night and the Phillies announcer saying that's the worst loss they've had in at least a decade. Great feeling.
Especially against the Phillies too. And we could even get into talking about the no hitter from last week, which was also against the Phillies, which I am still in shock about, but
in one week, the Mets have no hit the Phillies and come back from a 7-1 deficit in the ninth inning. That's to do that. Like in 1 week alone is nuts to do
it
against
in a season
one team.
Is crazy.
Like, yeah. But to do it against one team in a week span, less than a week span, is nuts. Like absolutely nuts.
We can get into talking about that. Although I'm sure if we can sprinkle more comeback chatter in as well, but as everyone knows by now, the Mets no-hit the Phillies last Friday. It was Black Jersey Day. So I think any chat about the Black Jerseys being bad luck since the Mets lost all their games in the Black Jerseys last year, that's over. But I was able to watch this game, luckily. And I know you did not go, but you went to the game after that. Yes, the combined no-hitter was spectacular. I had the sound off for the first few innings because I was still working. And then luckily I was able to watch fully the last like four innings, basically, of that game. And that was surreal. I've completely changed my tune at this point on combined no-hitters. I admit, you know, before it happens to your team, I can understand like scoffing at it. But now that it's happened to my team, I'm like, this is great. Like, I'm celebrating this like a real no-hitter. You know, I kept the newspaper from Johan's no-hitter. I kept the newspaper from this one. They're both historic in my book. It's just the sense of euphoria. And had I actually watched the comeback yesterday, I'm sure I would have felt a similar sense of euphoria. But I just felt like such, like I was like walking on air after the no-hitter. And I didn't even do anything, but it was just incredible. I was just so happy, mainly, just that the players got to experience this, you know, because I feel like there's so many players on this team that like I really care about that have been on either been on the team for a bunch of years or have done really well so far this year that I just like really want to see succeed. And I just felt very emotional knowing that they all participated in this historic game and that they'll have this for the rest of their lives. I was just like really proud of them, honestly. That was my overwhelming emotion, was just feeling very proud that like my team got to experience this and at home against a big crowd.
I agree. Yeah, it was great. And I mean, I mentioned it before, but that was the best I've seen Diaz look in a Mets uniform. I mean, he struck out the side, he went through 2-3-4, what was it, Harper, Castellanos, Real Muto. It was incredible. And the fact that he had to go through the heart of the order, like going in, you're kind of like, oh, like, first of all, they're like, yeah, the no hitter, but it was still only a 3-0 lead. Like it was a save situation.
I know. I wanted to win the game.
That's what matters. Like, I guess maybe people think the no hitter mattered most, but obviously the win is what really mattered. But yeah, the fact that they were able to get that done and all the guys, I mean, so what? It was McGill, Joely Rodriguez, Drew Smith, Seth Lugo, and Diaz. And for all them, I mean, they'll all be connected forever because of this. And it's kind of cool. It was 10 years after Johan. So, I mean, hopefully when they honor Johan, I think it's in June, they'll be honoring him for the 10th.
I think like May 31st or something.
Okay. So, I mean, hopefully they include the five other guys that just did this. Maybe they'll kind of do something with him.
That would be really cool.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it was awesome. I got home. I was working, so I didn't get home until I was listening to the eighth inning on the radio. I got home for the top of the ninth. I got to watch that at home. So that was cool. And so I guess I saw the most important part, but
yeah, it was cool watching the whole thing though. Cause it was funny cause McGill, you know, didn't allow a hit obviously, but he didn't look like super sharp. I think he walked three batters.
Yeah. They had a bunch of walks.
There are six walks, I think, over the whole game, but there were also, I think, at least 10 strikeouts as well. Cause McGill struck out a bunch of guys and Diaz did as well. Drew Smith struck out four guys, I think. And I mean, how good has he been this year? He still hasn't allowed a run.
You called it. I think you said something before the year that you were really counting on Drew Smith to be really good this year. And he's been a stud. Like, he's been awesome. I mean, we saw flashes last year. He had an ERA in the twos, but man, he's been unbelievable. And I guess that's why they kind of felt comfortable trading Castro, because they had Smith kind of waiting in the wings. But if Smith's going to pitch like this, I'd put him even ahead of Lugo in the bullpen, let him be the eighth inning guy, and let you push Lugo kind of to the seventh. And it really gives your bullpen
more length. I think they can swap. If Lugo's – he hasn't, you know, been unhittable this year, but he's had enough good outings where I still feel like I could trust him.
Yeah, but he's had enough bad outings that you're still kind of like, ugh, because –
Seth he's been Lugo, a little shaky.
There's kind of no in-between with Seth Lugo. He either has it or he doesn't, and you can tell right away.
Yes.
I feel like with Drew Smith, like, there's been a couple times where maybe he didn't have his best stuff, but he was really able to battle through it and, like, not give up anything. Not even not, like, give up anything. He hasn't given up, what, a run.
Right. Instead. You know, because so, I mean, even his outing, like, against the Braves when he pitched two scoreless in the first game of the doubleheader, there was a ball that, like, went to the warning track that, like, was almost a home run, which – but it wasn't. That's the important thing. Yeah, I mean, that was crucial in the no-hitter. He's been really important all year. You know, he's going to give up a run at some point, obviously. Oh, yeah. Like, that's very, very unlikely.
That's huge. If they can have him for the next couple of years to be a lockdown reliever, I mean, that's a big deal. But I think the bullpen's still a little shaky. That's definitely going to be when we get closer to the trade deadline, maybe even before then, that's going to be the spot they're really going to have to address. And I think they will. I mean, I feel like at the deadline, like, that's probably the easiest spot to address. You could also get it wrong. I mean, some relievers, like look at Kimbrel last year when he went to the White Sox. There's some relievers that they don't continue their success at their new with their new team. But yeah, I think that's definitely the area of need that they need to kind of attack is the bullpen. I think once they're able to shore that up, this is going to be a really, really, really tough out in October if we make it there, which I think we should. Obviously, we're only in May, but if this continues, we should at the very least be a wild card. But I would be shocked if we didn't win the division.
Baby steps.
But we saw what happened last year, so let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Getting as many wins as possible is important because you never know what games they're gonna like let slip away later. So I'm like,
they need to keep stacking up these wins while the rest of the NL East is playing like shit, because the NL East hasn't been that good so far. I mean, the Marlins have been a surprise; they've been a little better. The Braves, we split with them, but they're doing a good job.
I think the Braves are still going to be tough, though.
They are, but I think the Phillies will too. Like, the Phillies' offense is too good. Like, it's a good enough team that they're not going to be in the basement all season. So the fact that they're able to stack up these wins, especially against the Phillies, and this is a crucial time where they're playing a lot of their games against the NL East. I think it's like 13-14 straight, which will end with Washington next week. But it's a big, big deal that they're winning these games. And we saw what happened last year. You can never have too big of a lead in the division. So to stack it up as much as possible now, like we said earlier, it's just as important as winning these games in September.
Yeah, that's the thing with no-hitter too. Even if they hadn't gotten it, they would have and still won the game. They still won the series, and that was fantastic. You know, they still managed to win on Sunday, even when Scherzer didn't have his best stuff. He gave up three home runs, but they ended up scoring 10 mostly against the Phillies bullpen as well. So if they can just keep capitalizing. And that's why, like, you know, they haven't hit every game this year, and there's been some games where their offense has looked kind of anemic, but I still feel like up and down the hitters they have, I trust to make contact, like, more often than not. And they've been able, like, that's what's helped them win games is just not striking out in key situations.
Yeah, they don't strike out a lot at all. They're, like, at the bottom of the league in strikeouts. I mean, it's just phenomenal. The amount of balls they put in play, I think they're at the top of the league.
And that's the thing. Even that ball Canna hit, the comebacker he hit yesterday, that probably, if Knebel fields that's a double play.
Yeah, and if he lets it go, I think it's a double play too.
Yeah, exactly.
I shouldn't say let it go because he didn't purposely kick it, I guess. But
exactly. And so you just never know.
Put the ball in play, good things can happen.
Exactly. Yeah, the no-hitter was amazing. I know we were just talking about it, but I just loved also watching all, like, the post-game interviews too, like the one they had with, like, all the pitchers and James McCann lined up. I really want more of that. Group post-game interviews aren't really a thing in baseball, but when it's warranted, I feel like it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, the circumstances definitely warranted it. Yeah, it was cool.
I just like hearing, like, the players' banter, which isn't really something you get to hear during games or after games or before games, mostly. Like, you don't really get to hear them interact all that much. So I thought that was fun, kind of hearing them share their experiences of the no-hitter and how, like, none of them knew except for Diaz. And that makes his inning even more impressive, that he knew it was a no-hitter and none of the other pitchers did. And, you know, they all did their jobs, but he did his job, like, even better than normal.
Yeah, the fact that he was lights out in a high-pressure situation like that, like, that gives you hope, kind of, that if they do reach the playoffs, that obviously – this isn't nearly as big of a moment as the playoffs are going to be. But the fact that you're in a high-pressure situation, you've looked the best that you ever have as a Met, I think that's a good sign towards what he could look like in the postseason.
Yeah, and again yesterday too. Like, coming in, not necessarily expecting to pitch in that ninth inning. Warming, I'm not sure when he started warming up, but I know he and Lugo, I think, apparently were both warming up as the Mets were coming back. And to hold down that win with a one-run lead, because at that point, you know, the Mets scored seven runs, but it was only one-run lead on the road for the Mets. So that could have easily, you know, one mistake in that game still could have been over in favor of the Phillies. But to have that flip-flop in the ninth inning yesterday and then have him come in and, you know, set down the side was with one run, with only a one-run lead, it does give you confidence. Because I do still feel like it's still hard for me to get that mad. I mean, it's frustrating if closers blow games. But if it's a one-run game, I get less mad just because anyone can score a run. Like, you just never know. So
especially in a ballpark like Philly, I mean.
Yeah. So
look at that.
But to have games where, I mean, the no-hitter was 3-0. But there's been several one-run games that he's closed out this year that, you know, the game, even that game against the Braves, which we can get into, like in the first game of the doubleheader, which that, again, the bullpen was outstanding in that game because, you know, Peterson gave up the home run to Olsen. It was like 5-4 Mets after five innings, and no one scored the rest of the game. That was one of those games, too, where I was at both games of the doubleheader, and I was kind of like, that was one of those games where I was kind of waiting for the Mets to blow it just because I had a feeling, I don't know, I just had a feeling like they weren't going to score at all, and I was like, I don't know if they're going to hold this one-run lead against the Braves for four more innings. That seems like a lot to ask, but kind of like we've been saying, there's different people coming through every night. Sometimes a lot of games this year, it's been the starters who have really carried the load. You know, Carrasco in the second game pitched 8 scoreless against the Braves, which was just phenomenal. But in that first game, it was really the bullpen carrying the way in terms of, you know, the Mets did score early, but to shut down, I mean, the Braves have been uneven this year, but to shut down their offense for 4 innings at the end of that game and then to hold them completely scoreless the whole next game.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Was more than I expected. So,
how about two doubleheader sweeps so far this season against two good teams? I mean, the Braves and the Giants. I mean, that's huge. I mean, it's tough to win one in the doubleheader, obviously. To win both of them, that's phenomenal. I mean, just so many reasons to kind of just think that this team this year is different. Thank you to Steve Cohen for investing all this money and for actually putting his best foot forward. Look what happens when an owner puts his best foot forward.
When teams try.
Yeah. Like,
it's great.
Maybe the Cincinnati Reds could take some notes, and obviously they're not going to spend like us, but oh my God, man. What are they? They're 3-22 now?
Mm-hmm.
That's so bad. Like, imagine being a Reds fan. That's got to be horrible. I feel bad for Joey Votto. That sucks. Yeah. That guy's been there his whole career, and this is how they repay him with this shitty of a team. Like, that sucks.
Right. Well, and that's the thing is, like, you know, Mets fans have seen their team not spend money, have seen their team not invest properly in the resources that they need and players they need and filling different holes on the roster. And like, when you know the team is trying to be good, it's just, it feels so good as a fan to just know that, you know, they're not going to win every game. They're not going to win the World Series every year. They might not even, who knows what's going to actually happen, but you know that they're trying to win. You know that that Steve Cohen really cares. And you know that top to bottom, like, I just feel an overwhelming sense of competence, which is not common in our Mets lifetimes. And that's calming. And like, you know, that makes me feel a little better even when they lose games and it's like, ugh, that was annoying. But you still get the sense that they have the right attitude. You know, clearly Buck Showalter has been a huge influence, as we've said. A lot of the players have cited him as well as being very, you know, influential so far in them having success this year. It's a great feeling as a fan. And, you know, I do definitely feel bad for other fan bases when you know there's teams that just aren't spending any money. And that does suck. But we have experienced that.
Yeah, we have.
You know, maybe to not as much of a degree as literally spending no money, because I don't think the Mets have ever had a payroll as low as $40 million.
No,
so
it was never that low.
It was never
it felt
that
like it because
bad.
Of the market we're in. It felt like we were at that level because the revenue they're bringing in with the New York team, and they spent like we were in Cincinnati or Pittsburgh. That's kind of what it felt like. But yeah, it sucks. Hopefully they can – maybe Manfred steps in and does something with ownership, because that's just unacceptable. Like, this is kind of what the players were just fighting for in the new CBA. Yeah. Like, we want to be more competitive. And then you have a team that is the least competitive of any team in the last 20-something years. So, like, oh, I don't know. Hopefully they're able to turn it around. I mean, it'd be nice for them to maybe go on a tiny winning streak, maybe 2 games in a row.
Well, what I don't understand, too, about – and just going back to the Reds, like, they were pretty good last year. Like,
yeah, they got rid of all their players.
That's what I don't understand, is they were in contention for a wild card spot in late September. That's what makes this more confusing. It's not like they were cellar dwellers. in NL Central.
They let Castellanos walk. They let Wade Miley, or I think they traded him, or they let him. They might even just cut him. They're not.
They traded Winker. They traded Suarez.
I mean, Suarez was eh, but Winker was a stud. I mean, he was close.
They traded Tucker Barnhart to the Tigers.
Tucker Barnhart, you're right. They got rid of all. So no wonder they're shit. They got rid of all their best players.
Also, India, their rookie of the year, Jonathan India, has also been injured most of the year, and he was there.
Him and Votto, that's it? They're going to carry the team?
Well,
I don't know.
But, yeah, he was an important part of their team last year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. It's just a shame.
Hopefully, for baseball's sake, hopefully they turn it around, because you hate to see a team doing that badly. I just feel bad for the fans. But
well, if any Reds fans are looking for a team to root for, we'll let you hop on the bandwagon until your team decides to come back to relevancy if you'd like, so.
We welcome it. But yeah, also, one thing we didn't mention, too, about the Braves doubleheader was that the two of us finally got to meet in person, which we had not done yet. We had, I think, been to a couple of the same games, but they were only, like, this worked out because it was between doubleheaders where we finally got to say hi. So that was a lot of fun. Hopefully, we get to actually go to a game together later this season. We're definitely trying to make that happen.
Yeah, I was worried you were an imposter on Zoom.
It's hard to fake this, okay? I was going to show up and be like a completely different person. No, I was like, I got all my Mets gear.
6'5" dude showing up.
I had, I was actually a virtual background this whole time. I don't know if you noticed. I really played it well, but.
You did. Very good. Oscar worthy.
Thank you. But yes, no, don't worry. I was decked out. I had and also I would like to point out, I broke out my new Max Scherzer jersey for the first time at the doubleheader, and the Mets won both games. And they were previously in my Pete Alonso jersey. They were 1-7. I love Pete Alonso. I might have to. I'm switching.
I think
the
Alonso jersey has to be retired until further notice.
Until the Mets lose a game with me wearing the Scherzer jersey, agreed. I'm wearing that for the rest of the games I go to, because clearly it brought them good luck. Got that winning mojo. Not that Pete doesn't have that, but Scherzer definitely does have that. So, but yes, I'm very happy we finally got to meet in person. That was a lot of fun. And to top it off, the Mets won the nightcap. So
yeah, it was a great, great day. Yeah, I know you were at both games. I got there about seventh inning of the first game.
Yeah,
so I got to see them finish off the win, and then see them.
It was exciting. I was sitting with the 7 line with my friend, which we had done once before, and that was a lot of fun. And it was fun too because Pete Alonso's homer went into the bullpen, like the section next to us. Like it didn't come right next to me or anything, but we got to see it coming like right at us, and then drop into the Braves bullpen. Yeah. I was like, yes.
I was glad we got to see a homer. Yeah. I was afraid they weren't going to, because this team haven't really been hitting. I mean, we talked about it a little. They haven't been hitting a lot of homers. I mean, it's been a lot of contact and a lot of situational hitting.
A lot of singles, yeah.
But I think once the weather warms up, I mean, you have guys that their track record, they're known to hit home runs. I mean, Escobar has one home run right now, and he usually is good for like 20, 25. So I'm sure they'll be hitting more, but the fact that they're winning without them, it'll only bode more well for them, that when they are hitting them, they'll probably be winning more and scoring more runs.
Right. So. And that's the thing, because home runs, you just never know. But if they're playing good baseball in general, and that's much more sustainable than relying on home runs. If they'd scored all their runs so far by home runs, I don't think that'd be sustainable. But I think the brand of baseball they're playing is a lot more sustainable. And another great moment from this week that we haven't talked about yet was the fact that Travis Jankowski started both games of the doubleheader. And had a great day. He scored three runs. He led off the first game. He got on base like 4 times. I think he scored 2 of the runs in the first game. I don't remember if he scored in the second game. And he had a really nice post-game moment too, where he kind of was like acknowledging his role on the team and how important he's been, but being like, well, you know, no one's going to buy my jersey, so I know what my role is. But I feel like that just endeared him to Mets fans even more. And, you know, how important has he been? He's been a crucial pinch runner in late game situations. You saw he pinch ran for JD Davis and scored the tying run yesterday with basically no problem scoring on a single to center from second base. He's been a really important part of this team, and I'm so glad he's been here. I remember watching him a bit last year because he was on the Phillies last year.
Yeah, I hated him on the Phillies.
I worked a few Phillies games, and I remember thinking, I was like, this guy's really pesky. He was every game I saw him in, he did something, you know, and he's not a name that you think is going to do something every game just because. Yeah.
He's got that pedigree, though. I mean, he was a first-round pick coming out of Stony Brook. I mean, he was really good in college. He just hasn't never really been able to put it together fully at the major league level. He had some flashes kind of with the Padres and, like you said, last year with the Phillies. But, yeah, he's been that ultimate glue guy. Great defense at the end of games if you need it. He's a spark
plug.
And
the speed.
Using
him as a pinch runner, if you have that, is so important.
Yeah, that's huge. And, I mean, they already have some speed on the team, obviously, Lindor, Marte especially. But Yeah, it's great to be able to put him in last night, have him run for J.D. Davis. And who knows, J.D. could have scored maybe on that Nimmo single, but
it wasn't, I don't know. He's
wasn't
pretty slow.
Close. Yeah,
I
wasn't
don't know.
Even close with Jankowski. So, I mean,
no.
Yeah.
That was very.
Every team needs a guy like that. And this team just, that's what we keep saying. They have so many players that just are winning players. And it's just a feeling we haven't had in a long time. But, and it just, it's, I think if they do make it to October, like, this is the brand of baseball that wins in October. Yes, you're going to need your occasional home run. But you're going to need to steal some bases. You're going to need to play good defense.
Going first to third.
You're going to have good situational hitting and just be a good team, like, all around. Like, look at the Yankees. They've been great in the regular season the last few years. But when it comes to the postseason, like, their bats, if they don't hit home runs, they're really not scoring runs. And with the pitching you're going to face in the playoffs, you're going to need to be able to scratch across some runs and play some small ball and get the job done.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the fact that they're able to do that now shows that they'll kind of be able to attack you in all different kind of ways come postseason.
We've seen a lot of small ball. And kind of like we've been saying, the speed that the Mets have, it's not just about stealing bases. It's like, or even when you do steal a base. For example, in the doubleheader, one of the runs Jankowski scored, he was stealing second, throw went into center field, he went to third, and then scored on a sac fly. And, like, I think he got on with, like, an infield single. So, like, that's just the speed can give you an entire run. It's not just about, like, getting one base here and there. Marte's done that a few times where he – you know, he's gotten thrown out a few times in second, but there have also been times where he stole second, went to third because the throw went into center, and then scored on an out.
Yep.
And, like, every run matters. And
the Mets haven't had that in a long time, guys that could steal bases consistently. I mean, the last time they had a guy that would steal consistently was, what, Eric Young Jr.? And before that, Reyes. You know, like, and now they have a couple guys that if they're in the game, they can steal. Like, Lindor is going to swipe you close to 20 bags a season. Marte could push probably 50. And when Jankowski's in there, he might be able to steal you a bag a game if he's starting, like, if he's getting on base. So, I mean,
he's really, I didn't realize how fast he was
fast,
till
like
this year.
He's blazing fast. Yeah. So it's just, they have a great all around team. And it's fun to watch. And that's why, I mean, we didn't get into it really, but that's why getting rid of Cano just made the most sense. Like, yeah, he's had a good career, but the PEDs and everything suck. And yeah, it's just, he wasn't the right fit for this team. And after Dom Smith's 4-for-4 tonight, like, we weren't going to send him down. And Dom's a young player that I think at this point has way more upside than Robinson Cano has. He's way more athletic. You weren't going to cut Jankowski because then you'd be lacking all the things we've been talking about the last couple minutes. I mean, the only other guy that I thought could have made sense was J.D. Davis because of the start he's kind of gotten off to. But the way he's able to usually hit it.
They don't have that many righty.
Pitching, like,
he's
the
only righty bench bat,
they need
really,
him,
though.
They need him to platoon against left-handed pitching. And, I mean, we saw what he did in the ninth inning last night. So, I mean, if we had sent him down, who knows what the outcome would have been of last night's game. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think – obviously, we didn't get to talk about it that much, but I think that's why getting rid of Cano made the most sense. And to have an owner like Steve Cohen that's willing to eat close to $40 million just to put a better team on the field, it's just it's a great feeling as a fan knowing that ownership is fully behind this team.
Right, because apparently what Steve Cohen said was basically telling the Mets brass to make the baseball decision. And if you look at their roster, Cano was clearly the least valuable player so far. And not that he had the least, you know, potential, but he can't really field. If they need a backup second baseman, they have Guillorme. If they need a bench bat, a lefty bench bat, they have Dom and Guillorme and Jankowski. And if they need power off the bench, they have Dom, JD. Like, he was just not, he didn't add anything. And that was objectively the correct baseball decision, like, objectively. It's not even a question. Yes, I was thrilled when they actually did it. But I guess the thing is too, yes, they were eating 40 million or whatever, but I mean, if he's not going to produce, what's the difference?
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, it's a good point. If he's just, otherwise he's just taking a whole bench spot and
exactly
worse. Yeah, no, I agree. But I do think if Cano goes to another team, I know I've heard Miami, I've heard some teams thrown out there, I think if you gave him every day at bats, he could still hit and produce for you. But the Mets have enough guys kind of that are decent hitters. They need to stay more athletic.
He just didn't bring any versatility. And I think the
he has no versatility at all. I know he played a little first base in the spring, but we have Dom Smith can play first base.
Exactly. Right.
Like, we don't,
they have a backup first base.
There's no reason. We got some guys in the minors if we need to come up and fill in. So, like, it's just he wasn't a fit on this team. Like, just, and I know it was tough for Billy Epler. They go back a ways and
And he's well, and you know, if he like wanted to retire and Mets like brought him on as the hitting an assistant coach or whatever.
Yeah, I wouldn't have minded that.
I wouldn't care, really.
Or even if they had offered him at bats at AAA. I mean, I wouldn't mind stashing him at AAA. And then if, because you know, gets injured, injuries are going to happen at some point. So, I mean, that wouldn't be the worst guy to call up. But I mean, he's Robinson Cano. Like, he's not, I completely understand. He's not going to want to go to AAA. But yeah, I think it was like you said, it was the right baseball decision. And it's nice because in past years, the Mets didn't always make the right baseball decision. They made the right financial decision. They tried to make the best decision optically, which usually still didn't work out. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they're making decisions based on baseball alone, it's what winning teams do. And yeah, like we keep saying, it's great that they're putting their best foot forward.
It's so refreshing. And yeah, again, like other than the fact that he missed all of last year with the steroid suspension, I didn't personally have anything against Cano, but it, you know, I know the players really liked him. Like we've been saying, he just didn't have a place on the team. He's not here anymore. And I think that was just extremely refreshing. I was kind of nervous even going, like, I thought that's what the Mets really should do, but I wasn't sure that they were going to make that decision. I wasn't 100% confident that was the road they were going to go. I thought they might send down Guillorme. Just I know he's been great and he can back up like all the infield positions basically, but I wasn't really sure. I still wasn't 100% confident that this was the road they were going to go down.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was somewhat shocked that they did get rid of him. I just didn't think they were going to eat that money.
And yeah,
I mean that's the decision we all thought made the most sense, but it was still somewhat surprising for sure.
But look, they did it, and they've split the series with the Braves, had a great win against the Phillies. So we'll see what the rest of the weekend brings, what next week brings. But it's definitely looking like it's also one of the situations too where there's not that many players, and we also had Trevor May go on the IL this week with the stress reaction, which is a shame. It explains why he wasn't pitching well so far this year. He probably should have gone on the IL earlier. But I feel pretty good about like every player they have on the roster right now, which again, you can't always say. You know, not everyone's amazing. J.D. Davis hasn't hit that much this year in limited at-bats, to be fair. But I feel like every player they have right now, it really serves a purpose. And that's a good feeling to have as a fan, because when you see the lineups, it's not like there's only one good lineup that they can make from this roster, you know, of position players. So even if, like, someone's resting or whatever, like, I feel like pretty much any player they have, if he's playing, I'm like, okay. Like this could be good.
You have some level of confidence.
Yeah.
And I mean, it seems like, I mean, obviously Dom Smith wants to play every day. I'm sure JD does too. And if Dom keeps hitting, he'll play mostly every day somehow.
He'll DH a lot or play first.
And play first. But it seems like everybody's kind of accepted their role. Like we talked about Jankowski talking about what his role is, and he understands that every team kind of needs that glue guy. But it just seems like everybody's kind of understanding
buying in
and appreciating their role. Yeah. And buying in. And that's the Buck Showalter effect. I mean, everybody's buying in, and that's what it's going to take to make a deep run into October. Everyone needs to be on the same page. Everyone needs to buy into their role and understand that they have a valuable role on this team, which kind of everybody to this point has proven that they do have a valuable role on this team.
I think Buck's made that clear to all the players too. He has a really good sense
he's
of
really
like
good
how to make players feel valuable.
Keeping players in the loop. And I mean, that's a really big deal in today's game, because remember when Mickey Callaway got introduced and he's all about communication. We're going to communicate. We're going to be best friends with the guys. We're going to, you know, well, Buck, yeah, he has that medium where he's still their manager, like their boss in a way, like he's still kind of running the show and he's got that respect level. But at the same time, he's keeping the players in the loop. He's communicating with them. He has a good relationship. It's not like he's this hard ass all the time. Like they have a good relationship and everybody kind of knows what's going on, and that's valuable and that's a big deal. So if they can keep that going all year, that'll prove big come October for sure.
Like I said, there were a lot of really good things that happened this week. So I'm really happy we got to touch on all of that. I can't wait to see who knows what next week will bring. I don't know. The sky's the limit, basically. The Mets are facing, I think, the Nationals for four, and then the Mariners next weekend. So
the Mariners will be tough. I mean, Jared Kelly, first time coming in. That'd be cool how cool would that be, ending one of the games if Diaz strikes out Kelenic?
That would be cool. Yeah, I mean, he hasn't, you know, knock on wood, Kelenic hasn't hit that well this year at all.
At all. Since he got called up last year, he's been pretty shitty. But, I mean, he's a young player. A lot of young players are struggling.
Yeah, I mean, you never know. I mean, he probably will do something. I just have a feeling. Like, something, it would be too anti-karma for him to literally do nothing the whole series. So, we shall see.
We'll see, yeah. I'm sure he'll do something in his career, but let's just hope it's not till the end of the season after we're done playing.
Yeah. Yeah, just got now. Like,
but hey, if Diaz is closing out some big wins, obviously the World Series, but some big wins in the playoffs, even, I think the trade will be worth it. The trade looks a lot better now than I think it did, just considering how well Diaz has pitched. But yeah, it's been a big week for the Mets. It's been a big first month for the Mets. It's been a lot of fun to watch. Yeah. I think we've both enjoyed our time as fans so far, especially compared to past years. But yeah, it's a big week coming up. Hopefully they can take at least 3 out of 4 from Washington, and then Seattle will be a tough test. They're a good team. But yeah, I think they got a few easy games coming up that are definitely winnable, and to build some more
winnable. Distance. I'm not going to say, you never know with easy.
You never definitely know. Yeah. They're definitely winnable though. And you got to win the winnable games.
I think that pretty much does it for this week's episode of Cohen's Corner. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Cohen's Corner Pod. You can also follow me at NYMFan97. I mostly tweet exciting things about the Mets. And yeah, so if you wanted that, you can follow me. If you want more exciting things about the Mets, you can follow Jake at Giblin_Jake. And yeah, follow us there if you want. Listen to our episodes. We'll probably record again sometime within the next week or so. Thanks so much for listening. And as always, let's go Mets.